It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Skura, Matt Wilhelm. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. OBM, the official preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns. We know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. Today, Nathan Skura, Matt Wilhelm, go to that Ohio Business Machines Hotline right now and bring in John Costco for his weekly Inside the Numbers segment from Pro Football Focus. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going, Nathan?
Good, John. As we are here through the quarter point, we'll start off with a top-level look at this team, then we'll dive into that game against the Redskins. But at the quarter point, what, from the Pro Football Focus number standpoint, has stood out to you so far about this team?
Well, the rushing attack is the first and foremost. You know, Isaiah Correll is having a monster year. He's really surprised me this year. He's probably the most improved player on the team.
And he's your number one graded running back right now for the whole season at Pro Football Focus.
He is, and he's doing it beyond what the offensive line is giving him. The offensive line is blocking well for him. You know, look at last year, Chris Johnson was leading the league in rushing through about half the season before he got hurt, but he wasn't grading well for us, and that was because the offensive line was just giving him massive holes, and he was getting all of his yards that way. Crowell, he's doing beyond what the offensive line is giving him. He's averaging 4.51 yards after contact per carry, which is, it's a good rate for an entire season, like if you're just running the football without, you know, all combined. So he's doing that. He broke 11 tackles in the game on Sunday, and that's, you know, you consider how he had 30 career missed tackles coming into the season. So he did more than a third what his career was in one game, and he's been doing that in every game where he has an elusive rating, which is basically the measure of a runner's success beyond the point of his blocking, of 100.9. You know, to put that in perspective, the highest mark we've seen in the 10 years of PFF data, Marshawn Lynch in 2014 when he had a 94.3, and he had 102 missed tackles with a yards after carry of 2.96. So,
wow.
You know, you look at what Crowell is doing through the first four games is pretty impressive.
He's the number two rusher in the NFL. He leads the league in yards per carry. Then when you get into your stats, he's your number one graded running back. He's number one in yards after contact per carry at 4.5. He's number one in your elusiveness rating, and he's number one in breakaway percentage as well. He's basically hitting the trifecta, as it were, at that running back position so far.
Yeah, exactly. And he's getting spelled by a back who's doing just as good. You know, Duke Johnson, you know, if you filter out the carries to, you know, allow more running backs, Duke Johnson actually ranks first ahead of Isaiah Crowell, who still ranks second, even when you include runners that didn't carry the ball as much. He has an elusive rating of 116.1. He has 13 missed tackles on just 42 touches, averages – He's second behind Crowell in yards per contact after carry, or yards per carry after contact. And, you know, outside of that one fumble that he then recovered himself,
recover, so, yes.
Yeah, I tweeted that. Pinned it on my Twitter. You can see him clearly do that in the – I don't know what the NFL is looking at, but I won't go there. So. But, yeah, I mean, Duke is doing well. Crow is having a monster year. Then you look at, like, you know, Joel Bitonio is playing back at a Pro Bowl level. He should probably he'll get into that all-pro status. He's ranked as a fourth-graded guy at the position. Joe Thomas is having another great year. He's not actually at his normal level. He's given up a few more pressures than he usually has, but he's still grading really well. It's just everything – in terms of the run game, is going extremely well for this team right now.
And John, go into detail for the second consecutive week Cody Kessler started for the Cleveland Browns. What type of performance is he having in your eyes analytically through Pro Football Focus?
So he now ranks first in adjusted completion percentage at 81% and first in adjusted completion percentage under pressure at 87.5%. And all of his throws that he had in the last game, he only just downgraded for two of them, the interception and the deep ball that he barely missed Ricardo Lewis on. So playing at an extremely high level and taking, you know, he's taking what the defense has given him. And I would like to see him, you know, take more shots downfield because he only has taken a couple of those, and he's done five beyond 20 yards. And, you know, he hasn't, and I think he's just being coached to you know, hit what he's given him. But sure. If you look at, you know, the play where Randall Telfer dropped the pass, on that same side of the field, Terrell Pryor was wide open after evading Josh Norman jam at the line of scrimmage. So I'd like to see him be able to see that as the play is developing and be able to throw it over the top to get a big game like that. You know, small things like that where I think in time he should be able to develop, you know, that decision-making. But, I mean, he's incredibly accurate so far. He's and under pressure. He's been fantastic. He had a pass rating of 120 when he was under pressure against the Redskins this weekend. You know, and he's utilizing his play action really well. He's averaging 8.6 yards per attempt in that area. So, and then he's also looking at the mobility in the pocket. He's able to evade pressure when he needs to and find an open receiver. There's a lot that's going right for him right now.
John, when you look at this defense, Joe Hayden in the corner, where is he graded for you guys so far this season?
Hayden is ranking seventh so far in the NFL. It wasn't really targeted much except for on three plays last week, and then four if you include the defensive pass interference against him when he was a deep ball for DeSean Jackson. But he's doing really well. I mean, compared to last year where he, you know, gave up a perfect passer rating when he was targeted, this year he's doing, I mean, he's shutting down the opposing receivers. He's allowing only a 50% catch rate and a passer rating of 69.7 when he's been targeted. So vast improvement. He looks healthy. He looks like the old Joe Hayden.
And John, something that I think will change this week because the Patriots get back Tom Brady. But dive into the New England Patriots, and the two guys I want you to focus on are LeGarrette Blount, who going into last week was leading the league in rushing, and then James White, kind of a change of pace guy who really hasn't gotten off this season, but when Brady's been in the game in past years, out of the backfield in some scat-type situations, been very productive as a runner.
Yeah, LeGarrette Blount is a guy that will gain a lot of yards after contact and break a lot of tackles. Obviously, he's a big physical runner. He's averaged 2.7 yards per carry after contact this season, his 10 missed tackles. And he's a guy that, you know, I think he might get utilized less this week because of Tom Brady being back, so they might, you know, they're going to probably throw it a lot more than they had in previous weeks. So he's a guy that he'll be a bruiser up the middle. He runs well between the tackles, and they don't favor one area of the defense when they're running. Or, you know, so they, you know, they're average, you know, had 11 carries outside left end, 11 outside left tackle, 19, 16, 15, you know, all across the board, they're pretty much even. And then you got James White, who's, you know, he's pretty much their Deion Lewis that this year. He's not quite as effective as Deion Lewis, but he's good out of the backfield in receiving. He has forced five missed tackles on 13 receptions this year. And he's also, you know, he's also doing well in when he's given to draws and stuff like that. He's not averaging too much for yardage. He's only averaging 3.2 yards per carry and 1.4 after contact. But he's a guy that, you know, in space, he's dangerous, like a Deion Lewis for them last year.
When you look at this Browns team, I want to talk about a couple of third-year guys that are graded very high for you at their respective positions, Joel Bitonio and Christian Kirksey. How have they looked, and where do they stack up at their spots?
Yeah, Christian Kirksey is definitely a much improved player from last year. He's currently, you know, he didn't have a great game this past week, but he's been pretty solid in coverage and pass rushing, and he currently sits at 20th in our grades. That's still a really high rank because, you know, considering out of all the linebackers, you know, 4-3 outside linebackers and 3-4 inside linebackers. So it's a pretty good player right there, and he's doing well. He had a nice pass defense on an underthrown ball that Kirk Cousins had this weekend. And then you look at Joel Bitonio, he's been a great in the run game. He grades as the fourth best guard in the pro football so far this year. He's doing well in pass blocking, but where he excels is at run blocking. He's paving the way, pole blocking. If he's going on a double team with on the play side with Joe Thomas, he's sealing those edges. So he's back to his all-pro form.
And it seems they've been running right with Betonio pulling from that left side quite a bit and had a lot of success doing that so far.
Yeah, they have. And then when you have that, you need to obviously the right side of the offensive line to be able to make their blocks too. So that's where Austin Pastor has been really, really strong, and so has John Greco. So, all that has just been meshing really well. You know, Hugh Jackson has got this power scheme running, just wonderfully right now.
Someone who hasn't quite got off to the same start, at least through four football games of the football season, that was really playing well for the Browns last year, was Gary Barnage. Where does Gary line up via your Pro Football Focus stats, both in the in blocking as well as receiving, from a production standpoint?
So from a blocking standpoint, up until this past game, he had been doing well. He'd been blocking well. He'd been paving the lanes, and then this weekend he really struggled to block the outside linebackers of the Redskins, and his grade took a big hit. In terms of receiving, it's hard to get a rhythm and a connection when you have 4 weeks, three different quarterbacks. He's been better with Cody Kessler as his quarterback. He's been targeted 12 times, caught all 12 passes, and though he hasn't hit the end zone, he's been a reliable check down option for Cody Kessler, and he's made a couple of nice tough catches. He's had 19 on the season. He only had the two drops in week one, but since then he's been really strong in the receiving game.
Now, what's one stat about the Browns that might surprise some people?
One stat that would surprise. I think it's half. I keep talking about him every week, but that's Danny Shelton. He ranks first in run stops among defensive tackles and second in run stop percentage at 16.5. He continues to be strong in the run game, clogging the running lanes. Even if he's not getting tackles, he's disruptive and he's in the backfield forcing cuts and making the offensive line look foolish at times. So I think, with his improvement and how much it's jumped, he's beating guys like Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh in those categories, which is, really impressive feat to do. So I think, for me, that's the most impressive stat so far.
All right, John, we appreciate our trip inside the numbers on this Browns team. We have a lot of guys, surprisingly, in the top 10 at their positions so far in your Pro Football Focus grades through the first quarter of this young season. And we'll be back with you next week, hopefully, going to talk about the most important stat of all, a victory for the Browns, but it'll be tough against the New England Patriots.
Yeah, they got a guy named Tom Brady coming back, and I guess I would assume that Rob Gronkowski will probably be healthy and ready to go for them too, so it'll be a tough one.
Yes, it certainly will be. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time. We'll be back with Terrell Pryor when we return here on CBD.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and, of course, Matt Wilhelm. Let's go hear from a guy that many of you selected as the Browns MVP, the biggest surprise, most improved, all of the above, Terrell Pryor.
How would you describe your day? It seemed like a tale of two halves.
Tale of two halves. Oh, what's that mean?
What happened in the second half?
Second half? Just went ghost, right? Nah. We were running the ball great. And that's what we wanted to set the foundation as we were going to run on them and run the clock out. And it's unfortunate we had two fumbles, and that's what happened.
You looked a little incredulous when the ball was not given to the Browns after Duke's fumble. Was that a little?
Again, you know, for this team, like I always say, you know, like for this team and for the city and, you know, like I always say for the coaches, like, do I get tempered on the sideline? Absolutely. Because I want to win, you know. And some guys handle things the wrong way. Sometimes it's the right way. I don't know. I wear my frustration and, you know, stuff on my sleeve sometimes. And sometimes it's the best of me. But, like, that's how bad I want it. And sometimes it comes across a bad way. But I don't mean it like that. So when I saw that, I was very mad. And obviously, I didn't agree with the call because me and Duke was sitting there holding the ball. So, but it is what it is. It's over with. We can't do anything about it now. So.
When you watch it on tape, can you believe that they made that call?
I can't believe it. I mean, I think they thought the ball was still in the pile. Yeah. And me and Duke was tapping the refs and saying, hey, we got the ball right here. I don't know.
Bro, did you expect to get more snaps at quarterback than just that?
Nah, I just do what the coach says. You know, if he calls a play, I go. If not, we don't.
I know you guys can only control what you can control, but do you feel like at some point someone's going to swing in your favor? It seems like every week it's another injury, couple injuries, bad breaks, etc.
Yeah, we lost center Telfer, you know, hell of a blocker Telfer is, and we lost, you know, our center, you know, Ritter. I thought he was doing a pretty good job, you know, before he got hurt. And it's just like nothing can go right, but I think that's at times, you know, where we got to just push harder and, you know, just play better. You know, that's definitely start first and foremost with myself. You know, I don't think I had the best game in terms of just overall, you know, blocking. I take pride in that, and I just thought, you know, no matter, I don't have an excuse, you know, I just got to be better, and I got to be better, you know, and it starts with, you know, myself, hold myself accountable. And we'll get that on Sunday coming up, and I'll work hard to even do better.
After the game, was it just, you know, the frustration of, again, what happened on that Duke fumble, and just losing, just how bad you want it? Was that it? You just expressing your emotions after the game?
A wise man once told me, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. So. I stuck to those, to that wise quote or that wise, you know, information, and just went with that.
I know you enjoyed your first touchdown.
Yeah.
Is there any part of you that wishes you to help back on the celebration, given the penalty?
Absolutely. You know, I don't want to hurt my team, but I don't know, man. I was just, you know. You got a battle going on with a great corner, you know, and, you know, we were down 14-0, and we came back, you know, so that, I mean, I was juiced up. That's point blank, period. There's nothing else I can say about that. You know, I apologize to my teammates, you know, especially, you know, the coaches and especially special teams coach, because I put them in a bad bind, but juices was flowing, man.
Are they taking the fun out of the game, though, with some of these rules and celebration penalties? I mean, I grew up watching the Icky Shuffle. And
yeah.
It seems like they're legislating the fun out of it.
I don't know. I don't know. I think so. If you let go of some stuff, you know, there's kids involved and stuff like that. So kids are watching it, and I don't know. So there's a lot of gestures, and guys some crazy gestures. And, you know, something that we're trying to get away from the youth. So – I can see where they're trying to say, you know, this point blank period, this is what we're cutting out. So it is what it is.
If you would have put the ball down and not used it, you could have gotten away with it.
Yeah, yeah, probably. They said it was, I had no clue. I didn't know that what they call it, a prop. Yeah, I had no clue that you couldn't. I didn't know that. I mean, it's my first touchdown. I was like, why?
I didn't know you could shoot a bow and arrow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Hey, players make plays. You know, he made a great play. It is what it is. But at the same time, you know, I didn't know that was a bad celebration. And you weren't allowed to do that. I didn't know that. So I'm glad I learned my lesson.
Did you feel that in the second half, that running game, mm-hmm. it looked like it had you on your way? Could you feel it out there that defense was starting to really punished by that?
Yeah, they were. You could tell they were about to say uncle, as Hugh Jackson would say, Coach Hugh. And it's crazy, man. Like, jeez, you know, we're battling our butts off, you know, every game. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's us, you know, not being able to catch a break. I don't know what it is, you know. And, because, like I tell you guys all the time, we practice hard. I don't know. This is a very good team. I've been saying that, and I think, you know, I believe we're going to keep on making strides and we're going to win games and stuff like that. But it's just – it's crazy how, you know, so many times we're up and we're in the game and beating them, and then something goes wrong, you know. So we just got to find that, what it is. And I think what it is we just got to keep believing in what Coach Hugh brings to us, you know, what he tells us in the meeting room. And we just got to bring it out there, because usually when he says, you know, he's talking about the rushing game, he said that, you know, we're going to lead the league in rushing. And guys, you know, I think guys believed it, but I don't know. But I think his scheme and all that. And I think if we just believe in what he's saying and we try to our best of our ability and try to approach it like that and really listen to the details and get after it, you know, I think, you know, we'll be fine, you know. There's a lot of games left and a lot of possibilities left. So we're ready, and we just got to keep on taking those appropriate steps.
Terrell, even though you were only targeted four times in the second half and the focus was really on the run, mm-hmm. After the game, mm-hmm. Josh Norman, you know, came out and said that, you know, he went to a dark place and he mm-hmm. shut you down in the second half. And I don't know, what do you make of that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. First half, I mean, the guy's a great player. First half, he's press covered. Second half, he's playing off coverage and zone. So that's all I'll say.
Is there a tribute to LeBron?
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely, you know. Growing up, I mean, he was always one of my, you know, just watching him. He's great. So something I felt I wanted to do if I scored, and it's what it is.
You said that how good you think this team really is. I mean, you look at the last 3 weeks, you could just as easily be 3-1 with a play here and there. Is that something that resonates within the locker room that you guys realize?
What's crazy about the league is that, like, all it takes is two plays, you know, and the game's changed. That's all that happened to us. I mean, we're going in on a 10-yard line, fumble. We score there. You know, guy pressure bust pipes sometimes, you know. So we go up by 10 right there, and you never know. I mean, that's actually might be our first victory, you know. So three plays got out of our hand, and we just got to do better. And I don't think it's effort, and I don't think it's I just think it's we got to come together even more and go after it.
Have you been a long-time Tom Brady fan?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if so, you know, when you look ahead to this game and you know that he's coming off the four-game suspension, I mean, can you mm-hmm. imagine what this is going to be like?
It will be a circus, I know that, you know, from a standpoint of the media. But, I mean, he's earned that, you know. He's great. One of the greatest quarterbacks played the game, point blank, period, you know. So we got to be on our A game, we know that. And, we know that as a team, you know, we got to come together and have a great practice week and be ready to battle.
Terrell, what are your impressions of Kessler through his first two starts? What kind of growth have you seen?
I think he's great. I think he's doing a great job. He's managing the games well. Besides the last one, but didn't turn the ball over. You know, and that's all you need, really. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks in the league that are starting for a long time, and they manage it. And I think he does more than that because he's pretty darn good on third down. And that's something that Cody does an excellent job at. He gets the ball out, you know, he gets to redirects the line to the right places, and we're converting on third downs, which is a positive, you know. And he's just saying keep on getting better and growing, and I'm very proud of him, and glad to call him my teammate.
Browns wide receiver, and many people think first quarter MVP, Terrell Pryor. Love the guy's competitive nature. Clearly was into it with Josh Norman, got the best of him in the first half. And then the second half, just not a lot of targets. The Browns got away from that a little bit as the coverage changed from the Redskins. And I think that's one of the reasons you want Corey Coleman to come back. You need somebody to step up in this passing game that can be a threat opposite Terrell Pryor. And I think that will be key for this offense getting to that next level.
No, there's no doubt. And that's where the one thing is, we both kind of said Corey Coleman is, you know, our rookie of the year through four football games, a quarter of the football season. It's I can't wait to hear Hugh Jackson or somebody give us an update of when Corey Coleman's going to be back, because that allows our eyes to gaze over to the schedule and really understand when things are going to start getting real again, because we're getting the explosion out of Terrell Pryor, but relying on him week in, week out as he's still growing as a wide receiver is tough. And I think to have more weapons for Cody Kessler, I think it gives Hugh Jackson, in regards to his game plan, a much like larger gamut to go into these football games to stress these defenses we play.
I think you're right about that. When we come back, we kind of gave a quarterly look at the Browns. We'll do that with the NFL at large when we go around the league a little after further review, right after this on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. You can call us up 216-578-0850. Nathan Zgur, Matt Wilhelm here. Again, the news of the day in Berea, nothing major. Connor Hamlett added to the 53-man roster. Seth Duvall, Randall Telford, both banged up. Gary Barnage, the only healthy tight end. They needed another body. Hamlett is up. Don Jones, the special teams ace, is out. Now, special teams has been an issue. You're losing another veteran off of special teams there with Don Jones, Matt Wilhelm. Does that have a big impact?
I think it has not a big impact, but an impact. And I think the special teams unit has been up and down. And I believe going back into the Washington Redskins game, it was kind of like wasn't great, and it didn't hurt you at all. You know, as Cody Parkey made, as you said, a 51-yarder, and there wasn't a noticeable difference of the other facets of the special team. So, but the one thing I do know in watching the first four football games is Don Jones shows up around the football an awful lot on all your coverage teams, meaning kickoff, as well as, you know, punt and punt return. He's always around the football, and so you lose that. And I don't necessarily know if you're going to get Connor Hamlett or Randall, and obviously in place of Randall Telfer, if those guys are actually going to be, you know, on special teams, as they might have to actually be a liability. And that's the one thing that you see. Special teams is made up predominantly of defense, especially in the coverage units, because you want to get guys that tackle people on a consistent basis or have tackled people throughout their career on the coverage units, because you're forced to tackle in many of these situations. So you want as few offensive players as possible. And in this case, you have to do what you have to do in bringing up Connor Hamlett and yep, obviously releasing Don Jones. So it's not ideal from a special team standpoint, but is it detrimental? No, you just need that next guy to step up in the place where Don Jones played.
And somebody's going to have to do that. And when you've brought in a lot of younger guys, some of those outside linebackers, Lemonnier, he can be on special teams for you. Tyrone Holmes, guys with movement skills. And, of course, you got Marcus Burley here, a defensive back. You've got Brian Body Calhoun. So a lot of young guys who have come in that you hope can help you on special teams. And you've had Hollywood Higgins playing there as well with Ricardo Lewis from the wide receiver position. All right, let's bring in our producer, Matt Fontana, a little after further reviews we like to do every Tuesday. And we'll go around the NFL, kind of an NFL look at it on this one.
What's going on, Matt?
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Gentlemen,
doctor, let's get it started, guys. Give me one team that has surprised you the most through the first four NFL games, and the one team that has disappointed you the most.
I'll go first. I would say the one team that has surprised me at this point, and because of everything that was centered around them losing their quarterback, and I would say the team that won last night, the Minnesota Vikings, and getting an opportunity to see them play in prime time without Adrian Peterson, without Teddy Bridgewater. That franchise you thought was going to kind of fall off a cliff, but that defense has stabilized them. The trade by Rick Spielman to acquire Sam Bradford and stabilize that quarterback position, they're in good standing. And having beaten the Packers in that division, they hold the lead in that division, of course, being 4-0. Now, the most disappointing team I would have to say has got to be the Arizona Cardinals. And Nathan, you know, you talk about that that opportunity, and I don't know, the documentary, and what is it called?
All or Nothing.
All or Nothing. You know, on Amazon or Amazon Prime with your subscription, to be able to watch that and dig inside on just what Bruce Arians is doing. And I think What are they not doing? And does that have anything to do with Bruce Arians? Because, again, he's a guy that I would have wanted to play for as a player, and they sit at 1-3. Carson Palmer is probably not going to play in the concussion protocol this week. Drew Stanton is just a guy, you know, for that football team, and it limits Josh Brown, Michael Floyd, Larry Fitzgerald, so as well as John Brown. Did I say Josh Brown? Josh Brown's a kicker. John Brown. So it limits what they do. David Johnson, they're going to have to rely heavily on him. It's fine. I have him in a fantasy league. But yeah, I'd say the Arizona Cardinals at this point, many people's pick to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, sitting at 1-3.
I would say my biggest surprise probably is going to be the Rams at 3-1. Now, I don't believe in them, but I am amazed that they are 3-1. The Vikings going undefeated, losing Teddy Bridgewater, losing Adrian Peterson, and they're still undefeated. That's impressive. The Eagles at 3-0 also has been very impressive. In the AFC, no real surprises to me at the top of any of the divisions. I think the Raiders at 3-1, a lot of people like them this year, and they're delivering. The biggest disappointments certainly come from the NFC for me, and I'll give you two of them. You talked about the Arizona Cardinals. They're 1-3. How about the Carolina Panthers?
Yes.
Are 1-3, and that's a team that looks lost. They are struggling mightily. They're 1-3. I think also people in the AFC South and the Indianapolis Colts at 1-3. That's a bit of a surprise to some people. Same with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are supposed to be kind of one of those darling teams, much like the Raiders. But Carolina and Arizona, the two teams that I think many people thought would be the NFC Championship game, both of them struggling and right now would be on the outside looking in if they were going to play in the playoffs.
After further review.
All right, guys, New England went 3-1 without Tom Brady, so what's going to be their final overall record with him back for the remaining 12 games?
The remaining 12 games, I believe they're going to go 9-3 with Tom Brady at the helm, which would give them a 12-4 record.
I think they go 10-2, 13-3 the rest of the way. They could go as, I mean, Tom Brady might not lose if he doesn't want to lose. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be an angry team. But, again, they're smart enough to know that it's about getting the postseason and winning in the postseason. But they will be the top seed or the number. They will have a first-round bye, put it that way, in the AFC. Denver right now 4-0. They're the team to come after.
After further review.
All right, guys, who would be your league MVP of the season if it ended today?
League MVP. I would say, although they're 3-1, I think Ben Roethlisberger has to be in the conversation for league MVP. Who are some of the other players? Let's see.
I think
it's got to be a quarterback.
Well, it doesn't have to be. Von Miller could be in consideration given what he's doing and the fact that they are undefeated with Trevor Siemian at quarterback. I would certainly give Matt Ryan a look.
Yeah.
With what he's doing right now with the Atlanta Falcons. He's somebody that could be considered in that running as well. It's not going to be Sam Bradford. It's not going to be Carson Wentz for league.
Not
going to
be Cam Newton.
Not going to be Cam Newton, not right now. But I think you're looking at, I think Von Miller is a defensive player,
sure.
And then offensively, I think Roethlisberger, and I'd say Matt Ryan, who's had a brilliant start to
the season.
What
about Julio Jones or Antonio Brown?
Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown could be. I mean, guy's a stud. Julio Jones, 300 yards receiving last week. He's also a stud. So, yeah, I guess that's possible.
Zeke Elliott leading the league in rushing? No.
No.
Zeke Elliott,
you might as well say Isaiah Crowell.
Right. He was second, by the way. Matt Ryan is your leader in passing yards this year. Von Miller has 5.5 sacks. That leads the NFL. Julio Jones has the most receiving yards.
What did I say last? And, again, I'm not trying to just say this because I was right. I just said I even thought it might have been last year, but I said if Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware can play 16 football games, one of them is, one or the other is going to break the all-time sack record. And I think that Von Miller, year two, backing up that big contract that he held out for to get that extra, what, $10, $11 million that he wanted, is proving valuable for that football team as this week. And you tell me, I know after 12 receptions, 300 yards, people are like, got to start Julio Jones. Julio Jones now versus the Denver Broncos is going to be a horse of a different color, right? Aqib Talib and Chris Harris,
and he's that
TJ
good,
Ward. He's that good?
He's that good.
Then why wasn't he that good? Only had one catch that a lot of people probably shied away from him this
week.
Correct.
You never know game plan wise, but I do believe that he is going to be. I don't think he's going to get shut out by the.
To expect the production.
Well, you're not going to get that, but he could still have 80 yards and a touchdown.
Okay.
I mean, he's that good.
Okay.
He is that good.
After further review.
Final one, guys. Fact or fiction? Both teams, the aforementioned Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers, will make it to the playoffs this season.
I believe it is a fact that both of them make the playoffs. I think the Carolina Panthers, and you know what? Let me go back. I think it all depends how long Cam Newton can stay in the concussion protocol, because I think we've seen them before, and I've talked about it time and time again with them going to the Super Bowl last year, that Ron Rivera was on the cusp of being fired. You know, it was like one loss away from being fired, and yet they rebounded to finish that season, almost undefeated that year, and go deep in the playoffs, and then last year to go to the Super Bowl and lose. They have it in them, in their culture, to bounce back. So I would say it's a fact that they go to the playoffs and win that division, because it is a shaky division. I think Atlanta's fluky. I don't know if Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in their running game.
Let's not forget they were 5-0 last year.
Correct. Exactly. And I think, you know, the Saints are fluky. Tampa Bay is obviously, you know, not there. So it's a very winnable division. And then the Denver Broncos, I think the Raiders are 3-1, should be 2-2. The Chargers have – how about this stat? I think it was Trey Wingo that posted it that said that the San Diego Chargers have the most snaps with the lead of all 32 football teams, and yet they sit at 1-3. So I think the Chargers are fluky. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are fluky. So the Denver Broncos are going to run away with it. And a lot is going to have to do with Trevor Siemian not turning the football over, but it's that defense that has really stabilized who they are and not allowing other teams to come in and have success.
Yeah, I don't think the Panthers are going to make it. They're going to have to win their division to make it. I really believe that they are, and I don't know what's wrong there. Obviously, losing Josh Norman's hurt them. Their pass defense has been dreadful all year. Their defense is built up the middle, and I don't know if that really translates into the modern game, just to be built so strongly up the middle. So much happens out on the perimeters now in today's NFL, so I think that is something we're going to have to pay attention to. But Denver's a lock. I don't know that I believe that Carolina is a lock. All right, when we come back, final thoughts. Last chance for you to call up 216-578-0850 or tweet us with your takes on the Cleveland Browns here as we wrap up this Tuesday on CBD.
Three-time Super Bowl. Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm with you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Don't forget tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. It's the preview show with Ken Carmen and Gerard Cherry. Thursday night at 7, also on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, myself and Ken Carmen. The Hugh Jackson Show and the Hugh Jackson TV Show on News Channel 5 Thursdays at 7 as well. I saw an interesting article that came across from about Mike Tomlin saying that he wants clarity. He said, we have to get some clarity from the NFL in terms of what's legal and what's not. I know he doesn't want it to be a negative thing talking about Antonio Brown and his celebrations. He wants to provide positive energy for us and entertain our fans, but we have to get detailed clarity on what he can and cannot do. You've got to acknowledge some guys are followed more closely than others. You saw that last night with Beckham. AB is probably one of those guys, and he probably needs to respond accordingly. He's not passing judgment on how the officials do their job, but at some time he wants to figure out, you know, what is an acceptable celebration, what isn't. Why is the NFL making such a big deal about this? It seems like they're going way overboard. It's entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. If you strip it away and just turn it into pure gladiator sport, you're going to get people losing. And quite frankly, ratings are down in the National Football League. Why? I don't know the answer to that. But taking away fun entertainment to what can be a violent game doesn't seem to me like a great idea.
I believe the reason why, and in some cases, it's more they want to emphasize the team, not the individual. And I think that's why, you know, guys like Antonio Brown, and I read this on Pro Football Talk, that was told, go back in the locker room and change your shoes or don't come out on the football field.
Because of his Arnold Palmer tribute shoes?
Correct.
And who told him that? The league?
I think it must have been the league as well as the
referee.
Get
over yourselves.
Right.
Get over yourself.
So that's one thing.
But Deshaun Jackson can wear caution tape shoes and he can't wear a tribute to Arnold Palmer? Like, who cares?
I understand. But here's the issue, though, is the league will allow these guys to does Odell Beckham Jr.'s jersey sell more than Jamar Taylor's jersey?
Yes.
100%. You know what I mean? And so Odell Beckham Jr. reaps the benefits of his jersey sales and success in marketing and so on and so forth. And that's him being an individual, you know, marketing himself and being an individual. But yet, I believe the league wants everybody to walk the same line, look the same way, you know, on every Sunday, so they don't. It's team driven and franchise driven per se, because that's the moneymaker for the team.
Right.
Is the logo. The logo on your shirt. You know, that's a Nike shirt, but it's worth how much. That same shirt minus that NFL logo on the one sleeve and the Browns helmet is a $40 shirt with that at $65. You know, and there's a marketability to it. But I think the team, the league wants to make it more about the team itself and not about the individual. And the fact of the matter, I think they want to eliminate some of that stuff because of women and children and them reeling them into the game and capturing them for their lifelong, you know, football watching experience.
I just think part of the thing, kids do like that. Kids like that kind of excitement. I think
why was the dab?
Right.
That's why every kid's dabbing now.
It is, yeah. To me, it's just just relax. Let's have fun. These guys are putting their lives on the line. They're putting their physical well-being on the line, and let them have fun with a celebration. Got thanks to Andrew Gribble, John Costco from Pro Football Focus for being with us here today. For our producer Matt Fontana and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.